Welcome to the Jess Cagle Podcast with Julia Cunningham. Each week, Jess and Julia sit down with Hollywood's biggest names to discuss their current projects and take a trip down memory lane as they dive deep into their classic catalogs. SiriusXM presents the Jess Cagle Podcast with Julia Cunningham. Now, here are your hosts, Jess and Julia.
This Friday on October 15th, the Last Duel movie opens, and it is, of course, directed by Ridley Scott, and it stars Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, who did the screenplay. But that movie is based on one of the most fascinating books I have ever read, a true story about a real duel in medieval France. It was one of the last sort of judicially sanctioned duels. It was the last one in France, and one of the last ones that was really ever allowed to be fought. And the author of The Last Duel, on which the movie is based, is here to run us through the actual fascinating story that inspired the movie. The book is called The Last Duel, A True Story of Trial by Combat in Medieval France. Came out in 2004. And again, one of my favorite books. It is, it's written by Eric Jaeger, who is a professor at UCLA, teaches medieval literature. He's an acclaimed author and critic, and he is with us right now. Eric Jaeger, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me, Jess and Julia. Thank you so much.
I apologize for that introduction, which was, I think, longer than the actual book, but... we had to wind, had to set it all up. Anyway, Eric, what you wrote the book, as I said, back in 2004. I assume, and it was very successful, I assume that, you know, the movie version of this, or the intention to do a movie of this, has been around for a long time. How did it finally happen?
It has been. In fact, it was optioned by one director about a year and a half after it came out. And then that went on about 6 years. Another director got involved, and that lasted about 4 years. But this particular project, I first became aware of it in January 2019, just a couple of years ago, when my agent sent me a note, a very amazing note that any writer would want to get. Your option is up again, and Matt Damon wants it, which was electrifying. You know, I had to read that message many times before I believed it. So that was my first inkling. And it turned out that Ridley Scott would direct, that Matt Damon and Ben Affleck and Nicole Holofcener would be writing it, and that this all-star cast includes Adam Driver, Jodie Comer, who's absolutely wonderful in the film, and Damon and Affleck themselves. So an amazing thing. Yeah, I could hardly believe it.
Well, you may have had some... You obviously lived with this story for a very long time. I mean, it's fantastically researched, and you probably had some idea what the actual people that it involved look like, and certainly were familiar with their psychological makeups and all of that. Did any of the casting surprise you, or did it all seem pretty spot on?
Well, I thought the casting was very good. And I also, you know, I would add that although we have a certain amount of documentation for these people, certainly places they appeared, things they said, testimony they gave in court, even the book includes quite a bit of guesswork here and there. You know, I don't know how Marguerite felt when she had to make this midwinter journey to go visit her mother-in-law, but it was winter. Her husband was ill. She may not have gotten along well with her mother-in-law. Certainly later events suggest that. And so I did a little bit of interpolating there and interpretation to sort of come up with how I depict her, or what Jean de Cruz and Jacques Legris felt when they went into that walled field to fight it out. They'd been probably practicing and getting ready for months, checking their armor, doing all sorts of things. But, you know, what did they really feel? Again, it's a little bit of guesswork.
I want to run through the story, and Eric, just to set it up. So Marguerite was, this is about a duel that was fought in 1386, I believe. Is that, mm-hmm. that's correct? Yeah, 1386 in Paris. And Can let's talk about the main characters a little bit. You mentioned Marguerite. Who was Marguerite?
Okay, so we've got two old friends. Marguerite is a Norman noblewoman who comes into the story sort of in the second act, you might say, because Jean de Carrouge, a Norman squire from a very old family, has a friend named Jacques Legris, also a squire at the beginning of our story, from a newer family. He's sort of new money, and they're good friends. And there are all sorts of ways in which the book depicts this friendship. It involves Jacques Legris being godfather to one of Jean's sons and so forth. And then around 1380, after Jean de Carrouge has lost his first wife, he marries Marguerite de Thibouville, who's from a very old family as well, and a fairly wealthy family, although her family has this sort of cloud over it because her father, Robert de Thibouville, twice betrayed the King of France. And so in a sense, Jean is marrying a traitor's daughter, but she herself seems to be, you know, perfect. She's beautiful. She's wealthy. She seems like a very virtuous and intelligent young woman. And it's not until about 4 years after that marriage that Marguerite is actually introduced to Jacques Legris, because after about 1380 and after this marriage, for separate reasons at court, quarrels over land, quarrels over promotion at court or preferment, the two men seem to fall out. And Jean de Carrouge even retreats from the court of his overlord, Count Pierre. And it's not until 1384 that Marguerite, at a sort of social gathering, is introduced to Jacques Legris. And they're the two old friends who have become rivals or who've fallen out, reconcile, it seems. And Jean de Carrouge introduces his new wife, his fairly new wife, Marguerite, to Jacques, and even orders her to kiss him as a sign of the renewed friendship between the two men. Now, kisses were a very important ritual in medieval society. They were, in whether in religious context or feudal context or romantic context or whatever. And this was sort of a kiss of friendship or a kiss of peace, signifying the restored friendship between these two men. And that's when Jacques Legris seems to have begun taking great interest in Marguerite.
So everybody can sort of envision what we're talking about. Jean de Carrouge is played by Matt Damon. His wife, Marguerite, is played by Jodie Comer. And then his frenemy, his sort of former friend slash rival, maybe they have a rapprochement at some point, is played by Adam Driver. That's Legris. And then Ben Affleck is Count Pierre, who's sort of the overlord. So what then happened to lead up to the duel, accusations made by Marguerite?
Okay, very quickly, Jean de Carrouge goes off to Scotland in 1385, hoping to gain wealth, and all he comes back with is a knighthood. He has a fever, he's lost money, he's in a bad shape. He goes off to Paris in January 1386 to be paid for this military campaign, leaving Marguerite with her mother-in-law, Nicole de Carrouge, who's played by Harriet Walter in the film and very wonderfully by her. And so Marguerite is alone with her mother-in-law and servants in January as Jean de Carrouge is in Paris. And one day, Nicole de Carrouge, her mother-in-law, is herself called away, summoned to court, leaving Marguerite, and she takes all the servants with her for reasons, again, described in the book, probably having to do with her sense of herself as a great lady who needs an entourage. And Marguerite is left alone at this lonely old chateau in Normandy. And she is, at some point, she is accosted there by a man named Adam Louvel that day. This is Thursday, January 18, 1386. Accosted by a man named Adam Louvel, whom she knows. And one of the documents I'd found in Paris that hadn't really been well known indicated that Louvel had once served under Jean de Carrouge. So it's quite believable that she knew him, that he knew her, and that he could have a conversation with her. Well, before she's been talking with him very long, and he says he carries a message for her from Jacques Legris himself appears, apparently forces his way into this manor house, makes an impassioned plea to Marguerite, according to her testimony, which is very carefully recorded by the Parliament of Paris, where this case was later heard, where Marguerite testified under oath repeatedly to these details. And according to her very specific testimony, Legree offered her money, said that he knew about her husband's money troubles, and said he loved her, that she was the lady of all the land, he would do anything for her. Marguerite adamantly refuses these offers. He grabs her by the wrist, makes her sit down on a bench. This is all very specifically detailed in her testimony, and renews this impassioned plea. Very soon, the violence escalates, and the two men, as she refuses Legree's advances, grab her, carry her kicking and screaming up a stairway to a bedroom upstairs, where Legree throws her down on the bed. While he leans down to unlace his boots, she says, she manages to struggle free and runs around the bed to another room, to another doorway. And this is a very typical sort of layout. You don't have a hallway with lots of doors on it. You have one room with doors onto other rooms. She tries to escape into this other room, but he grabs her, throws her back on the bed, eventually calls for Louvel to come back into the room to help subdue her, and Jacques Legree rapes her. So those are the charges that she made in court, that the story that she tells her husband when he comes back from this trip to Paris. He takes up her cause. They share this account of hers with their close relatives on both sides of the family. And the news eventually reaches Count Pierre in his court. And he's outraged that Carouge would accuse Legree, the Count's favorite squire, of these horrible charges, but holds a hearing, as he must, when there's a quarrel between his men, and declares Legree innocent and says that all the charges should be quashed, expunged, and no one should ever raise a question about it again. Very strange thing. Jean and Marguerite are not there. And again, the book goes into some of the possible reasons for this. Possibly Marguerite, after her terrible ordeal, wasn't in any shape to travel to court to appear in public, or they may have feared for their lives. And there is some evidence that Count Pierre was so angry about these charges that he would have had the knight killed, according to one account. So for whatever reason, they do not appear. But because the Count has ruled against Carouge, he has an option, and he may have counted on this to begin with, that he can appeal to the Count's own overlord, who happens to be the King of France. And so Jean de Carouge, no doubt leaving Marguerite well protected and guarded in the aftermath of this terrible event, goes off to Paris to make his formal appeal to the king. And then that really puts into motion a legal process that eventually leads all of the principals to come to Paris, a formal challenge between the two men, and a months-long inquiry by the Parliament of Paris on this case as they get Legree's testimony, as they take in Marguerite's story, and they adjudicate, they confer over the charges, the evidence that's been collected, and cannot decide between the two stories. And I think the fact that Marguerite's own account, as it comes to us in the records, is very credible and very compelling. The fact that Legree's own lawyer was impressed by her case and had some doubts, evidently, about his own client, and the fact that the Parliament could not reach a decision about this suggests that her story was very compelling to them too. And in the end, on September 15, 1386, they declare or authorize a duel, which by this time, such trials by combat were very rare. And they set a date and the preparations begin.
Well, and that's one thing, Eric, that I found fascinating to read about, because I assume all duels are like what I have seen in movies, like A Knight's Tale and Game of Thrones, i.e., they declare a duel, it happens within 5 minutes, and that battle is done in 5 minutes. And reading the amount of time it takes to gear up for it, the weaponry that they have, the kind of the battle axe and long dagger and long sword, and the process was not what I imagined. Can you describe a little bit of what actually happens in a duel?
Well, sure. You have, in addition to all of these legal steps that I've described, the appeal, the challenge, and so forth, and then finally the decision to have a duel, They actually require no duel can take place sooner than 40 days after the decision. So there is a delay a lot longer than the 5 minutes you mentioned, which means that both sides have a chance to prepare. This may mean ordering new armor. This may mean getting back into practice if they've been off the battlefield for some time, all kinds of things. But once the duel begins, and even on the day of the duel, you have elaborate ceremonies on the field. I'm sure in some cases the actual fighting was not as did not last as long as some of those prior ceremonies. You have oaths that are sworn. You have weapons inspections. You have heralds announcing rules to the crowd, which are very faithfully depicted in the film. No shouting, absolute silence. Everyone must sit on the ground, this sort of thing. And finally, the fight actually begins, and it begins with the marshal throwing a hat or a glove into the air and shouting, "Let them go," and then shouting more orders in French that finally allow the two men to begin to fight. And in this case, they probably began on horseback with lances at opposite ends of what was quite a long field. We have some fairly specific dimensions that come down in the records about what this field looked like, how big it was, raked sand to create a smooth surface, and a wall, as I've said, around the whole thing to prevent the combatants from escaping or to prevent interference by the crowd. And so they charge at each other with lances and try to unseat each other or wound or injure each other on horseback. And that seems to take place without injury until the two men are fighting on the ground. There's some evidence from visual depictions of this duel that were once made, a tapestry and a wall mural. They no longer exist, but we have detailed descriptions of those, that visual art. And they include reference to axes. So there probably was an axe fight of some sort at some point during this duel. And that too is depicted in the film. And then a sword fight, and eventually perhaps wrestling on the ground with daggers in the final stages of the duel. So you really get sort of them starting with longer weapons and at some distance from each other and ending up in very close quarters with swords or daggers.
I want to let everybody know, if you don't know this story, or you haven't read Eric's book, or you haven't seen the movie and you don't want to know the ending, I would say turn the volume down right now, because we are going to talk about the end of the story, which is of course well chronicled, very well chronicled in Eric's book, The Last Duel, that the new movie with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon is based on. It was interesting, Eric, that the thinking behind sanctioning a duel is that the court could not figure out who was telling the truth. And so they figured a duel would be putting it in God's hands. God would decide who would win, which of course also put Marguerite in terrible jeopardy. If her husband had lost the duel, then they would decide, well, she was lying. God has shown us the truth, and she would be, what would happen to her?
Well, it's a terrible thing to think about, and a terrible thing that she faced, because yes, in capital cases like this involving rape, if a woman were shown supposedly by the result of a duel to have been lying, or even to have been making a mistake in her charges, she would be burned at the stake. She would be burned alive. And the chronicler Froissart, where I first found this story, he's this wonderful 14th century chronicler who tells all these stories of the time, including the Hundred Years' War and royal intrigue and so forth. He has six or seven pages, really gripping pages, about this duel. And he has a wonderful aside where he says, I don't know if the lady, Marguerite de Carrouges, had regretted by this point having gone so far with her charges that she and her husband were in such great peril. But then in the end, there was nothing for it but to await the outcome. And he has a line in there too. He says, I don't know because I never spoke with her. And I've always thought that's one of the great missed interviews of the Middle Ages. I mean, if only he had spoken with her at some point, but we don't know. And he's sort of speculating, and we can only imagine what terrible anxiety Marguerite herself was in, even as I do, believing she told the truth. She knew she'd told the truth, and yet it all depended on these two men in the battlefield, and it could go very badly on that day for her.
And here's the big spoiler. Her husband prevails in the duel, so she is allowed to live and go off with her husband. Legree is killed. But it's so interesting, Eric, as you point out, in the wake of all of this, despite the consistency of her testimony, historians and chroniclers of that time and up until the very recent years, really until your book probably seemed to settle the conventional wisdom on this, people kept coming up with reasons for her to be either lying or mistaken. It was kind of fascinating, a sort of cultural refusal to believe her accusation, even though Legree had a real bone to pick with her husband, even though Legree was known as kind of a cad, even though he's played by Adam Driver in the movie, which means he's a total.
Yeah, this is what. Go ahead.
You make this point very, very well in the book, what women face then and now when they speak up about sexual assault.
Well, this is one of the things that really struck me at the time, because I read the record. I mean, we have these primary sources like the Parliament's records of Marguerite's testimony. We also have Legree's alibi, and it's a fairly detailed alibi. But I was convinced that she was telling the truth, and then I was surprised to find all of these detractors and doubts, beginning pretty close to the time of the story and continuing on up to Voltaire, Victor Hugo, all of these great tribunes of the oppressed turn against Marguerite. Why? And I really felt that she deserved better justice in her own time and also better justice in the history books. And I don't think I would have embarked on writing this book if I hadn't believed her. And this is, more than 20 years ago that I, started writing this thing. But I really, really felt that I wanted to sort of correct the balance and sort of take away, as I do, especially in the appendix to the book with some arguments that step outside the narrative there, take away the refuge that all of these detractors, overwhelmingly male, by the way, had found, whether that they thought she was in error or lying. And those are the two main theories. And I pretty much, I hope, vanquished those with my book. But you can find as recently as even after my book was published, 2009, 2010, scholars repeating some of these old stories that I don't think they've examined very closely. So I'm hoping that one thing the book does, one thing the movie does, is bring more scholars and just readers in general into this debate. And I hope that Marguerite's amazing story gets another look, because she certainly deserves that.
The book is so magnificently researched and so magnificently written. And, adding to that, which we don't have time to get into, Marguerite was revealed to be pregnant soon after the rape, which, of course, adds a great deal of poignancy to her story, as well as, more mystery as to where the baby came from. The movie opens this Friday, and Eric Jaeger, the author of The Last Duel, it's a great audiobook too. I just might want to point out the actor that reads
that's
it
very nice.
Is just fantastic. Eric Jaeger, thank you so much for joining us. Loved having you here.
Jess and Julia, thank you so much for inviting me. It's been just a pleasure to talk with both of you.
This has been the Jess Cagle Podcast with Julia Cunningham, a SiriusXM production. Hear new episodes every Tuesday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.